Hello and welcome to the Generation Change podcast, brought to you by the committee members of D4C Southwest, which is part of the Construction Excellence. I'm Tom Jones, and I'm delighted to be your host for today's podcast. Today, I'm really excited to be speaking to Michael Calver about his experience within the construction industry. Michael has nearly two decades of experience working with construction and architecture design tools. His area of expertise has been with creating 3D visual designs and digital twins. Michael is the founder and CEO of Amutri. Michael and his team at Amutri have been busy building a new software product that allows people to rapidly create 3D visualizations of their construction designs. Michael, thanks for coming on. How are you doing today?
Very good, thank you, Sam. It's a pleasure to be here.
Thanks for coming on again. And I was really interested to speak to you today to give our listeners insight into the software and technology opportunities within the construction industry. Like, we can all agree that digital technology has started to, well, has transformed the way people carry out their day-to-day work in the industry. And this is only set to continue as more software solutions are created. So yeah, it'd be really interesting to sort of start by telling us a bit more about you and Amutri. So can you tell us a bit about your company, Amutri, and what you do?
Absolutely. And thanks for the introduction, Tom. It's appreciated. Yeah. So I spent the best part of sort of two decades building and designing advanced 3D visualization, immersive technology and simulation capabilities across different industries, including construction, including architectural design, automotive, aviation, sort of Formula One motorsport as well. And okay. In that experience, I've sort of really sort of seen sort of firsthand the power of 3D visualization, but at the same time, I'll also witness the significant amount of time and cost associated with adopting and leveraging technology. And Amutri is planned to be the solution to that, essentially. So it, in essence, automates the creation of 3D virtual environments online. So at this point in time, it ingests computer design information and BIM files and converts them into a high-quality photorealistic experience in the web in seconds. So that ultimately reduces, obviously, time and cost, but also means that more people and organizations can adopt and benefit from the technology as well.
Who are the sorts of professionals that might actually use your product?
So our starting market is primarily focused on those within the built environment. So primarily architects, designers, and design consultants at this point in time. And we plan to expand our market size and market opportunity dramatically over the next few years by entering sort of product design and automotive design as well. Okay. But initially, our target customers are customers within the built environment. So primarily the design, sale, and marketing of spaces and places. We found that the majority of our sort of most underserved customers reside within organizations within the built environment. And from a technical point of view, it's a little bit easier for us to deliver value in this space initially, followed by more sort of slightly more technically challenging industries to enter next.
Okay. Cool. And I mean, it's interesting. Obviously, you've really lived and breathed the like 3D visualization industry, you know, almost 20 years experience working in it. So I guess, you know, how did you, what made you to take the plunge and think, oh, you know, the tools and solutions I'm using at the minute aren't quite good enough, or there's this opportunity? How did you decide, how did you come about and think, yeah, this is, I'm going to run with this idea and I'm going to go for it?
Absolutely. Yes. Yeah. So, I think during the time that I've spent in the industry, I've always been pretty much overwhelmed almost by the potential of the current solutions used by, for example, 3D artists, 3D visualizers, and software developers. But I've also been very aware of how difficult those packages are to use and adopt and support. Ultimately, they all have sort of very high entry points and follow the current model of sort of engineers and tools for engineers. And there's really not much consideration around developing software solutions that enable non-technical experts to adopt quite advanced technology. So guess really over the last sort of 5 or 6 years, I've really identified a gap in the markets when it comes to 3D visualization. And I kind of realized that there's nothing in the markets that really exists that provides a simple path to 3D visualization. So we're seeing Amutri as almost a Canva or 3D visualization. So a quick sort of cost-effective and user-friendly approach to 3D visualization.
Yeah, amazing. Well, it's interesting. I think, I've started using Canva a bit over the last couple of years or so, and it's pretty straightforward to use, isn't it?
It is.
Okay, cool. And I think with what you're trying to do with that rapid 3D visualization, like how long would that, for a normal firm, say you've got an architecture firm who want to give a 3D visualization to a client, how they go about that doing it now? They either use an in-house capability team, or would they give it to a particular sort of service provider? And how much will they typically spend on a project like that?
Yeah, so typically, there's two options available. That's right, Tom. Either build an in-house team, which is obviously extremely costly in terms of overheads of staff salaries, hardware and software costs, or outsource the whole thing to a third party. Outsourcing to a third party is slightly more cost-effective potentially in the short term, but it ultimately introduces barriers to the full, well, it introduces barriers to enabling organizations fully leverage the technology themselves, and in the long term it's quite expensive. And obviously in-house teams, again, it's a very sort of manual, laborious approach with that requires specialist skill sets which command a high salary. So really the process is ultimately taking computer design files and building information modeling files, manually sort of tweaking them and refining them and fixing them ready for 3D visualization, and then bringing them into software packages like 3ds Max and then rendering those things with V-Ray, or maybe if you want an immersive experience using the Oculus headsets, for example, you would then take that 3D model into a games engine like Unity or Unreal and then deploy that to a headset and then eventually show that to a client, for example. So it's a several step process with many points of failure, and each step requires a specialist skill and hardware and software. There's no kind of one-stop shop for a high quality immersive 3D visualization. So right now, I guess the time from sort of CAD to client engagements with a 3D visualization is in the best situation 2 or 3 days. If it's a more complex building with more complex requirements and it has more detail on the inside and furniture and that sort of thing, it can take sort of a week, maybe even 2 weeks, to create a high quality experience of a new space, for example. And with Immutry, we're currently at MVP stage, but it is taking less than 30 seconds to achieve that each time. So we've essentially automated that whole process from computer design all the way through to client engagement.
I've personally seen sort of, the Oculus, you're calling it, those headsets where you can check out the designs of places, and it's helped, builders understand the desired finish and stuff like that of particular aspects of the build. And I've been shown 3D images of specifications and stuff. But I guess it's the next step, isn't it? It's coming into that, building the actual model that you can be more of a interaction with, I suppose.
Exactly. There's a whole sort of new set of ways of engaging with sort of 3D content, specifically within the built environment, looking at sort of CAD data. But there's not an awful lot of sort of consideration in the software space when it comes to the time and cost of creating content. So I guess in terms of hardware options, there are sort of tons of VR headsets, but each of those headsets and each of those sort of mediums requires a team behind it, essentially, to author content, to refine it, polish it, and ultimately deploy it. In some cases, organizations may recruit developers to build up a spoke in-house solution, which makes the process a little bit faster. But again, that comes at a ridiculously high cost and ultimately requires support and maintenance and ongoing
updates.
It's kind of interesting. There's not many solutions. Well, there's actually no solutions right now in the space, until Immutry, of course, that actually delivers long-term value. So it's kind of interesting.
Awesome. It sounds like Immutry is a really exciting exciting business, and I'm sort of looking forward to seeing how you develop over the next couple of years. But yeah, as you know, sort of part of this podcast is to help give people an insight into the different types of careers available within the construction industry. And I think, you know, coming from your background of the sort of like the technical software and architecture software side of things, it'd be really interesting to give our listeners a bit of an insight into how you started your career in the construction / sort of built environment industry. So yeah, how did you let's go back to the number of years ago. How did you start and how did you get involved in it?
Yeah, initially I sort of found more way into, I guess, the built environment and construction through it's kind of an indirect route, but ultimately sort of many years ago I was developing skills and experience around the creation of video games, really. And pretty quickly I realized that the technology that supports the creation of video games and that sort of entertainment has what I believe much more potential outside of gaming. So over several years I started to employ gaming technology within non-gaming applications. And in doing so I really sort of started to realize that absolutely there is vast potential beyond gaming with gaming technology. And the design of the built environment really kind of lends itself, or at least gaming technology lends itself to the design of the built environment. With video games, obviously you can sort of 3D move around, you can interact with a 3D environment quite easily, it's quite user-friendly. So it's becoming quite a natural fit between design and real-time CGI, which is basically what underpins video games. So ultimately, providing designers with a way to, in real-time, experience and see design changes became a very obvious use of the technology, really. So over the course of years, we started to sort of build tools and solutions to help facilitate the design of spaces and places with gaming technology.
So you actually you sort of started your career out as a game designer, game developer, is that right?
Mm-hmm. Exactly.
I know it sounds just out of curiosity, what sort of games were you working on then?
At that point in time, it was mainly sort of mobile games. It was at that point in time taking sort of old Commodore 64 games and reworking them into a higher quality, more sort of same modern format, really.
Yeah, sure. Interesting. Yeah, no, I mean, I think obviously when you think about it, when you're going into, like the sort of the games that I grew up playing, things like Grand Theft Auto and stuff like that, you know, it's a massive amount of, they have to like design all the buildings and everything that goes in there, and it's just like a 3D space in itself, isn't it? It's like each game kind of creates its own new world, I suppose, doesn't it?
Exactly.
And so I can see how you kind of got, you know, those applications into real life. You know, obviously you've been working with different design software from like, you know, BIM and 3D visualization tools. How much has it advanced within the years that you've been working in it? Like, has it been going up? Yeah. What are some of the biggest advancements you've seen?
Yeah, I would certainly say the way in which BIM and CAD data can be consumed in terms of like virtual reality and even eventually the metaverse, that's really progressed. But in terms of the methods in which computer-aided design files and BIM files are put together, from what I can see, that hasn't changed very much over the last 15, 20 years. Okay. Really. It's still the same approach, really. But I would say that the applications of those files and that content has dramatically developed. So like looking at augmented reality and virtual reality and those mediums, again, all have developed in maturity, but again, all depend on the availability of content, which is certainly one of the biggest barriers to entry of that technology.
To any of our listeners who are potentially in like sort of thought about going into video games or I don't know, other software careers in software or not even, they're just kind of thinking about what they want to do in the future. What advice would you give to people who are considering joining this space, this industry, you know, that would like the software and construction industry? Because I imagine there's lots of opportunities out there. I mean, I imagine you found it hard enough finding people to help you build your software, let alone all the other firms that you're kind of fighting the developers for and things. But yeah, what would you say to someone? What would you say to someone who's considering joining the construction industry?
I would certainly say I'll suggest to sort of look to ways in which sort of current industry processes and methods can be iterated and improved upon. Certainly not sort of accepting the status quo of processes and where things are done. If software or some technology isn't delivering value or it's causing a block or a barrier, then obviously I would suggest to sort of consider ways in which to create change, remove those barriers, and ultimately create some additional value in that space, really. So I would say that also, yeah, there's sort of vast opportunities in similar to sort of gaming tech, but finding other technologies that are leveraged outside of construction and finding ways to almost sort of cross-pollinate those technologies across into construction. So I've kind of always found that, for example, like entering the games industry is a very sort of competitive environment. And yeah, obviously there are sort of many sort of very talented individuals in the gaming industry who I would say are sort of underutilized in terms of their sort of skill sets. And I found that by simply taking something that's tried and tested in one industry and applying it elsewhere where its perceived value is much higher is certainly a solid approach for me.
And given that the journey you've taken and your career within the industry, like, is there, apart from that advice, is there anything you'd have done differently at the beginning, or like anything else, any other bits of wisdom?
I guess from my perspective, I would have considered entrepreneurial sort of pursuits a little early on in my career. I haven't left it too late, thankfully, but I would have much preferred to have done this in my sort of mid-20s. So yeah, I would say it's never too soon to start considering ways of sort of taking great ideas to market and scale them, really.
Okay, and so talking then on that entrepreneurship spirit, then is it something you've always wanted? Like, even from at the beginning of your career, did you feel like you wanted to take that route, or was it something that happened a bit later on after a few years?
Yeah, it took a little while. I had to spend quite a lot of time in the industry and pretty much as far as I could do master, what I was doing in terms of the creation of I had to sort of spend some time refining my skill sets and becoming pretty much a master of everything that I was pursuing at that point in time with 3D visualization, sufficient enough to equip me with the skill sets and experience and depth of experience to build a product which is designed for high growth and to essentially achieve mass adoption. So with the developments of technology which powers Mutually, I had to spend some time and sort of ensure that I've got broad enough skill sets and deep enough skill sets in key areas to facilitate the founding of what I would hope to be a high growth startup, really. It just took some time, really. A little bit longer than I would have liked, but I got there eventually.
Awesome. Look, I think that's really interesting to hear. I think maybe now more than ever, people's careers go in slightly different ways, various different ways you can go into it. And I think within the construction industry itself, there's so many different different parts to it, and there's nothing stopping you necessarily going from one area to another part of it as well, depending on your skill set and what you want to look for in theory. But like, I think I agree with what you said in terms of getting a getting it's like those sort of number of years under your belt, really understanding the issues and problems. It takes a lot longer than you might think, I guess. Yeah,
absolutely. Yeah.
Awesome. Look, well, look, it's been really good having you on the podcast today, Michael. Before we finish, it'd be really interesting to talk a bit more about sort of looking into the future, I guess, within this space. And it'd be interesting to hear about, you know, what the plan for Amutri is for the years to come.
Yeah, so ultimately our plan over the next sort of year or two really is to dramatically lower the entry points to 3D visualization and all of its permutations in the here and now, whilst eventually enabling organizations within architecture, engineering, and construction to access the metaverse. So in the immediate term, we're hoping to be the Canva of 3D visualization, but in the longer term, we aim to be the Wix or the Weebly or the Squarespace of the next version or the next evolution of the internet.
Really? That's it. The metaverse, interesting. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, obviously it's interesting. There's a lot of chatter about the metaverse. Earlier this year, later last year, it seems to have kind of calmed down a bit. companies spending loads of money on real estate in sort of someone's metaverse, but I think that seems to have cooled down a little bit, hasn't it?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, there's a lot of hype around the metaverse right now, a lot of misinformation, but I think ultimately, at the very least, the metaverse will just be an ecosystem for immersive technologies to thrive with products and services that deliver long-term value, as opposed to the current kind of, I guess, quick wins and short wins and sort of gimmicky sort of tech demos, really. I think at the very least, it would just be an ecosystem for immersive tech, but obviously it could evolve way beyond that, of course, and enter our daily lives, but we'll see how that goes.
Yeah, no, I mean, I think it kind of depends how, with the immersive technology side of things, isn't it? It's never going to feel like you're somewhere you're not, I suppose, but. Maybe I could be wrong. It'd be like the Matrix, I guess.
Yeah,
that's like the ultimate version of the metaverse, isn't it? The Matrix.
It is, absolutely. Certainly. And I guess it's all just going to be driven by obviously demand, sort of consumer demand, really. But I think in the immediate term, I really just see the metaverse almost being just an enabler for immersive tech and provider of high quality content, whether it's through augmented reality experiences or virtual reality. But it's just going to be interesting just to see how brands and organizations leverage the technology. I've seen some really crazy experiences of sort of the metaverse that just don't make sense and actually distract
like what,
you.
Like what?
Essentially, like almost like I've seen a few sort of online sort of virtual banking experiences where you can walk in to like a virtual bank and withdraw money and walk around and stuff, but it just seems to be a distraction and had many sort of added sort of steps to the process, which obviously with a mobile device today, you can do that in like one or two or three clicks. With this experience, it's like a 5-minute thing and it actually delivers no value. But it's just interesting to see how organizations are at least perceiving how this technology can be used. And in many cases, it's unfortunately, I'm seeing quite a few gimmicky sort of experiences which don't really deliver value to users. Yeah.
I guess that's inevitable to begin with, I guess, and with something like this.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Because I think it's what I find interesting about the metaverse, and it's like a bit like Google Maps, isn't it? You know, you've got this whole area of where you look, but then you just try and most people will just end up looking in the areas they know and experience. So maybe that's what people, the metaverse, even though in theory you could build castles of whatever, a lot of people will actually just quite like the familiarity of going somewhere they know what it's like in real life. But I don't know.
No, absolutely, that's a great use case.
Okay, cool. Well, look, it's been really good to talk to you today, Michael, and like I said before, really exciting to see how Amutri develops over the next couple of years, and maybe we can catch up in a couple of years once you've transformed the world, I suppose.
Absolutely. Yeah. Well, let's see. Thanks for having me. Thanks for the invite. It's been great speaking here.